And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello. It's time to say your majesties because we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Today is Wednesday, February 1st. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. You can listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts and thoughts and questions. Give us a listen. Download us. Guys, it's been 3 days since last Sunday. We now have our Super Bowl teams. We have an NFC champ in the Philadelphia Eagles after a not-so-good game. We have an AFC champ in the Kansas City Chiefs in what turned out to be an epic battle. Kings or Queens, let's start with the NFC first. Philadelphia winds up winning 31-7. They start the game with a scoring drive. It goes 5 minutes and 2 seconds. Devonta Smith makes the catch on 4th and 3, but it's not really a catch, but it's ruled a catch because they can't get the challenge flag out. They score. That starts everything off. Then Purdy gets hit. He fumbles. He gets injured. He's out of the game. Josh Johnson winds up coming in. He gets hurt. The San Francisco quarterback position is a mess. And from that point on, San Francisco basically can't throw the ball. They can't do anything. The game seems to just get out of hand very quickly. Philadelphia kind of just runs this down little by little. They're never in doubt. Kev, thoughts on Philadelphia advancing over San Francisco?
Well, first I want to get out of the way. NFL officiating was absolutely horrible in both games.
Both games.
Missed calls that went one direction, not the other. It was just awful. And I think we'll hit on some of the thoughts that we had as we go through the other games. The first game you mentioned, the NFC game, so Philly comes down, first drive comes down, gets that touchdown. Like you said, Devonta Smith with the non-catch, it was ruled a catch. And I'm watching that play thinking, if you're an NFL coach and you've got one of the top receivers, do you train them? Can you train them on these tight catch, non-catch type things? If you feel the receiver is 100% sure that you caught it, can you train him to act like he maybe bobbled it, try to force the other team to use the timeout, use the challenge early in the game, just from a strategy perspective? Is that something that you can do? Is that something you can teach? Is that something you can coach up? Because I'm looking at Smith, and I really thought it was a catch. And then he's showing that he's, you know, trying to hurry up. And at first, I was wondering, gee, it looked like a catch to me on the first glance. It wasn't until, you know, well after that was not a catch, if you could see. But could you trick, you know, if you get a Devontae Adams, if you get an A.J. Brown, you get real top-notch receivers, can you use them to trick a team into, like I said, using a timeout, using a challenge early in the game?
I don't know if you could trick them into using a challenge, but I mean, I definitely think there's a strategy. And that was the one thing that kind of confused me, because when he got up after making that catch, not catch, whatever you want to call it, he was making some gesture with his hands. He was pushing his hands together, kind of signaling like, hurry up, let's go, let's go, let's go. And if you're on the other team, if you're the other coach and anybody sees this, isn't that like a signal to you to, hey, wait a minute?
Instead of just doing it like that, all you have to do is call timeout. It's the first half. You don't have to throw your challenge flag until you get the timeout done. Then you can see it with the replay because you'll have time. And it's a 4th and 3. So, listen, in the third quarter, you got me. Like, do I want to risk a timeout this early? Even though it seems like teams are doing that a little bit more than I'd like to see anyway. But in the first quarter, 4th and 3 – game-changing play. You see him rushing. You see them rushing up. Timeout. Let's just see. I thought Shanahan had an awful game.
Yeah. I agree.
Shanahan was awful.
So after that, Purdy gets hurt. There are 5 straight punts between the teams. Mm-hmm. San Fran's defense played well for most of the game. Like I said, five straight punts, played the field position game. San Fran finally got the short field, got it at the 46-yard line, and McCaffrey had the hell of a run to get to tie the game up at 7-7. Then comes a big Philly drive, 14 plays, 75 yards, gets a touchdown, takes the lead. Now, here's where Shanahan was getting a little some criticism, I think, near the end of the first half. Why are you going hurry up when you've got Josh Johnson at quarterback? To me, you had a minute 35 left. Yes, you get the ball to start the second half, but Philly still had a couple of timeouts left. To me, you still had to be aggressive. And not that you have to push the ball 25, 30 yards down the field. First pass, he completed to Debo for 11 yards. And if you get a couple of those plays, you get into field goal range at the worst. You do not expect Josh Johnson to just drop a shotgun snap. Philly recovers, gets a touchdown, 21-7. Big turning point. Like, up until that point, San Fran was still in the game with their defense. You still had Johnson, who at least gives you the threat of throwing the ball. Like, I didn't mind Shanahan being a little aggressive there. What did you guys think?
For me, I thought that he should have stayed aggressive because with two timeouts left and that amount of time, they're getting the ball back at about the 30-yard line and at worst if you don't move the ball. He completes the first pass, just like you said. So now you're at the 36. So now, you know, they're not going to stop the clock because they're not going to get the ball outside of their 20 most likely. So now you're moving. Perfect snap, and it looked like Johnson had no urgency to recover that fumble. That ball seemed like it was laying there for a half an hour. He moved over, then he went down, but never showed any urgency at all to recover it. I thought he should have gone forward. I know, yeah. Gino disagreed. I know Gino's saying that – I think Gino's going to say that you should have sat on it, but I would have went forward with it. I agree with you, Kev. G?
So when I was watching the game, I kind of thought that they should have slowed it down. And even if they had to have taken the field goal and get the ball back, but that way you could have regrouped at that point. You already lost Purdy. Johnson's in there. You're trying to get him acclimated to something. I mean, it's the fourth string quarterback, for God's sakes. And you're playing hurry up with him. How many snaps do we think he really had? Eight? I mean, you know, prior to this game, I mean,
but he's had 15 years too. You know, it's not like he's never played before.
I know.
He quarterbacked the New York Football Jets. I don't know if you realize this.
You're throwing him in the NFC Championship game, and here we go, and here we are. You're playing Eagles in Philadelphia. I don't know. For me, when I first saw it, I kind of thought that he should have slowed it down a little bit. But when I thought about it a little bit, I don't know. I was starting to go either way, but. My first reaction was, I don't know why the hell they're trying to go so fast. So, go ahead, Kev.
To me, I think they were going fast. I'm not playing necessarily for a touchdown. I'm playing for the short underneath passes. I'm playing for the dump off to McCaffrey. Something to get, you know, 8 to 10 yards of play. Get down to field goal range. That's what you're looking for there. And like I said, I just don't understand the drop. He just flat out dropped the snap. Just
looked away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you start the second half. San Fran gets the ball first. Of course, we know that Johnson gets sacked, gets a concussion. And from that point on, game is over. We were texting, do they go McCaffrey, Wildcat? Do they try this texting, or that?
Yeah. Damn right I was texting that.
I think you had to mix it up at least somewhat. You had to do a little Wildcat, whether it was McCaffrey or Debo or one of those guys. You know, the direct snap where all of a sudden now you get the extra blocker because you know the Philly's going to be playing up. They're going to be playing multiple men in the box. You've got to do something to try to get the extra blocker in there to run the football because you know you've got no chance of throwing any passes, especially with Purdy now in there with a – turns out to be a torn UCL. Poor job there, but – you know, you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place. Not much Shanahan could really do. Gina?
Here's the one thing that occurred to me when I was watching that, and is I didn't like the fact that he knew Purdy couldn't throw the ball and he had him in there so often, because if you start playing Wildcat, and even if you put Purdy in there every, I don't know, four plays or five plays, right? At least then you're changing it up. And even though you may not be able to, giving them the appearance that he can throw the ball. But once you go through six, seven straight plays, you obviously know he can't throw the ball. The only thing he's throwing is these little flings, you know, screen passes that he can't even basically get his elbow in the air.
Yeah.
And you completely took away the whole option, the whole play call of passing the ball. For me, that was a bad job by Shanahan, not even disguising the fact that Purdy couldn't throw the ball at all. So, Darren?
I thought Shanahan was awful. I think you guys are doing really, really nice by him here. Okay, like we say, okay, that first series, you know, you see them rush up, you call timeout. It's the first freaking half. You call timeout. You have to see what the hell's going on. Just what are you doing? You're not even giving you're the guy that can stop it. You have to do something, okay? Okay, the 7-7, the McCaffrey run was amazing. Philly comes back and scores 14-7. Here's the excitement of that drive, okay? They converted I'm just looking at the stat right here. They actually fumbled the four defensive penalties aided that drive and a fourth down conversion. It wasn't like San Francisco's defense was getting beat up. They beat themselves. They basically didn't do anything. Four defensive penalties on one drive. Yeah, Kev.
For the entire game, Philly had seven first downs by penalty. That's unheard of.
It was just ridiculous. I just couldn't understand it. They kept hurting themselves with these penalties. And they were all penalties. You know, you sit there, you say, you know, whatever. But there's so many penalties that aren't called during a game that are in that pass interference range or whatever, the face mask you have to call, you know, certain things. So then they go 14-7, they get down the field, and you're saying, all right, you got the ball back. You know that Philly can get the ball back, and, you know, Sirianni's going to sit there and use his timeouts to get it back. So they go out, they make the pass, they get to the 36, and you're saying to yourself, okay, you dump it to McCaffrey, you do a screen or a draw, something like that. And if he can get himself out to the 40, 42, 43, maybe you try to put a little pressure on it. If not, they're not going to stop the clock because they're not going to get the ball back in good field position. Instead, Johnson fumbles the ball, boom, and that's it. I mean, here's the thing. Hurts wasn't good, guys. Hurts wasn't good. Neither was the Philly offense. If you take away the one catch that shouldn't have been, he threw for under 100 yards for the game. Okay? I mean, it wasn't like Hurts really tore it up. It wasn't like the running game really ate him alive. San Francisco hurt themselves so much with defensive penalties and the roughing, you know, and they roughed the punter. And it was roughing the punter. I mean, these are all penalties. But they killed themselves with stupidity. And the Wildcat, I know you don't have your offense planned around the Wildcat. You probably don't have a scheme. This is the last game of the freaking season, Shanahan. This is it. You know, we don't have next week to regroup and we take the loss today. It's over. So now you sit there and you put McCaffrey on because you're playing 10 on 11. And you know what else? Philly knows it too. Even if you play McCaffrey at quarterback and you sit there with Debo in the backfield with Jusek, right? And you play two tight ends and just Ayuk at the wide receiver. That's it. You play a crammed offensive thing. You let McCaffrey, you know, play a little bit with Debo or run every now and then Jusek. Every now and again, what's going to happen is the tight end's blocking. Everybody comes up, and he's going to be able to get behind for a 10 or 15 or 20-yard catch. It's going to happen. They're not going to sit there like that. They're going to keep storming up. And Shanahan didn't even think of that. It's like, what do you – you got a guy with a torn UCL. He's telling you he can't throw. He couldn't throw, and he didn't even try. So you play 10 on 11. You might as well have the other blocker in there. Bring in the second tight end. If they stop you playing as hard as you can, then you know what? They deserve to win. Philly would have probably won the game anyway. I mean, you know, at that point. But you didn't even try. It's basically like you're like, okay, here we go. We lose. I mean, but the I don't know. The game changer was that fumble that turned the entire game around, and then it was pretty much over. I mean, Philly had the 91-yard drive at the end, aided by the roughing the kicker, because they had stopped them there. The other, I mean, one touchdown touchdown was a 30-yard drive. One touchdown was a 4th-and-3 that was an incomplete pass. One touchdown was 4 defensive penalties, and one touchdown was roughing the punter. I'm not trying to say Philly didn't deserve to win, but let's not pretend Philly played really well in this game because they certainly did not. And San Francisco just got tired at the end. G?
And Shanahan, to me, has always been this offensive guru who knows how to do all these things. And honestly, he came down a peg for me with this game because and listen, I understand it was your 4th-string quarterback. I get it. But you had nothing. It was almost like he's like, okay, I'm waving a white flag here. Purdy's going to be the quarterback, and at least he can get everybody set at the line, and whatever we do, and that's it. And, you know, like you said, this is the NFC Championship game, for God's sakes. This is it. There is no tomorrow after this. And, you know, I agree with you because – if you have McCaffrey back there, at least you're given the appearance that you can do a couple of things.
Purdy, you're playing 11-on-11. You're playing right now. It's like playing hockey the last half of the game, 4-on-5, saying that's our Hoosiers. My team's on the floor. What are we doing here? We're not trying to teach a lesson. You're trying to win the NFC Championship. I thought Shanahan was god awful. And, you know, listen, I you can't blame him on the defensive penalties and all that stuff. And I don't even get mad at the guy trying to block the punt, trying to make a change on special teams because he had to. You can't get mad at any of those type plays. But, my goodness, the defense actually held him in pretty good stead for most of the game.
And it was a bad game to watch, too, because along with the Philadelphia team knowing that San Francisco couldn't do anything, we all knew San Francisco couldn't do anything watching the game. It was horrible. The second half was horrible. It really was. We live for this stuff. The second half was horrible.
But that's normally the best weekend of football of the year is the championship weekend. Supposed to be the best. I don't care if you're sitting there. You're the stick. You're the bottle cap. This is what we're running. I know we haven't practiced this. O-line, you guys are firing off. That's it. You really can't sit there and say we're playing 10-on-11. That's what they did, and everybody knew it. You knew it. Kev, you knew it, and I knew it. And it was it. You can't play 10-on-11 in this league. You won't win.
I don't care what
10 you have.
Philadelphia advances 31-7. We all know what a bad game it turned out to be. But then we got a gem, guys, because the second game turned out to be an absolute gem of a game. It was a great game.
Kev doesn't seem to agree. He didn't think it was a gem.
And this is where the horrible officiating kicked into overdrive, and we'll get to it in a couple minutes.
The officiating was far worse in game 2.
Absolutely. Kansas City winds up winning 23-20. They're up 13-6 at the half. It's 20-13 after 3. This is an even game going back and forth. Butker winds up winning it with a field goal with 3 seconds left. Kansas City advances with Mahomes on half a leg or whatever the hell it was with the ankle. But, Kev, why don't you start us off with Kansas City-Cincinnati?
Good. I mean, especially compared to the other game. Real good game, competitive game. That's what we were hoping for. A gem. I saw a lot of mistakes by both teams.
It was a gem, Kev. That was a great game.
It was exciting to watch.
It was exciting to watch.
Yeah. But to me, you know, Kansas City, first 2 times they have the ball, they drive, get some drives going, they settle for field goals. The first quarter, Cincinnati had 0 yards or 1 yard, something like that. That does not make a gem. It's a watchable game. It's a close game, competitive game. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think we're playing with semantics there, probably.
All right.
But
you know what you're talking about, Kevin. Keep the words clean. 2 syllables or less.
But yeah, you had Mahomes fumbling. You had Burrow throwing pick. Close game. I don't think the offense has made as many plays as they should have or could have. Maybe it's a little defensive effort. I don't know. Something was just missing.
Darren, what do you think?
Darren, go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thoughts, because Kev, thanks for that in-depth analysis.
Yeah, I know.
I'm kidding. Here's the thing. apparently the Chiefs really were pissed off about this Burrowhead because we heard about it after the damn game.
Yeah.
Apparently they had a little bit of a stick up their ass about that one, which was interesting. And all the other rhetoric that was thrown around by the mayor and all that stuff. The Chiefs settle for two field goals. Tony drops a touchdown, and then they commit a holding on another touchdown run. They said they hurt themselves. They could have been up 14-0 or at least 10-0. Instead, they're up 6-0 early. Cincinnati had to make adjustments. Chiefs had four sacks in the first two series. So in the first three series, I should say. But but nonetheless, Cincinnati couldn't move the ball, and they adjusted, and they did do a good job. The big play for Cincinnati that cost them the big situation to me was when Boyd went down. Because the Chiefs didn't seem to have an answer for Boyd, right? And they were talking about all these other injuries about the O-line, but when Boyd went down, I thought Romo and Nance did a horrible job of not even really addressing it at all. Without Boyd and with Irwin in that spot, Boyd's big. And the Chiefs are playing at that point because Snead's already out of the game, right? So Chiefs lose their best corner. They're playing four out of six defensive backs are rookies. First-round pick, second-round pick, fourth-round pick, seventh-round pick, okay? And then the other guy's Thornhill that's sitting out there. I mean, they really don't have much. And Reed, who they brought in free agency. So the Chiefs don't have much back there, but they're at least competitive. And they're battling against Chase. And it seems like Cincinnati's best play is the jump ball now. Now all they do is they throw it up because I have big receivers and I have all the stuff. G?
And what the Boyd injury really does is it allows the Kansas City defense to start double-teaming Chase and Higgins.
Exactly.
That's it. And so now they're double teaming both of the wide receivers. And basically at that point they said, okay, if Hayden Hurst is going to beat us, then he's going to beat us. But Burrow didn't play well.
Burrow wasn't thinking about Hurst as much as he should have been. Yeah. Because Hurst should have been the guy that caught seven or eight balls. Because what happens to the Chiefs is this. Then Willie Gay goes down. Best cover cut linebacker. Right? So now you lose Snead, you lose Gay. Then on the offensive side, they lose Smith-Schuster. On the offensive side, they lose Tony. On the offensive side, they lose Hardman. And all of a sudden, the Chiefs are down five starters. Just like that. Boom. In this game. Cincinnati's one starter that goes down probably hurt more than the Chiefs' five. Because Boyd was the difference maker for them. Even though Mahomes, you know, you may like them, may not like him, whatever it is. The kid played on one and a half legs, and he played as hard as he possibly could. He couldn't run. Every time he looked to run, they stopped him. He had to throw it away. He came out real sharp. They started figuring him out. Lou Anarumo's probably the best defensive coordinator in the league right now. He seems like he makes adjustments on the fly because that's not a very talented defensive backfield at all. Eli Apple, they ran him out of this town. He's like a starter. He's a star on that team. So that just tells you what Anarumo can do. But I thought that, you know, there was weird refereeing in this game. I've never seen a play that didn't count that was run. I thought that was the worst. I mean, it didn't. The funny part about it is most of the referee calls did not affect the outcome, but it did affect the time on the clock. Okay, so it didn't affect the outcome. Like, I thought the play was grounding. You guys may think that Burrow didn't ground the ball. If he would have reached the line of scrimmage, I would have given him no grounding because he threw it in the backfield and the receiver was 6 yards downfield. I thought it was a good call. The call at the end of the game, even as a Chief fan, was not happy that the game ends because Asai is running as fast as he can and he pushed Mahomes on one leg. And who knows if he embellished or if he just had no balance, but he was clearly out of bounds. That call was there. But there were so many other weird calls that weren't there, and I just thought the game was poorly done. The thing was, though, to me, was that Boyd thing. Because once Boyd goes out of the game, Cincinnati didn't seem to have a clue. But they fight back anyway, right? So, you know, Watson gets the interception. Chiefs go up 13-3. Bengals close the half. They get down to the two or the three, but they have to settle for the field goal because they run out of time. Kev?
I thought that's one spot where Taylor just did a terrible job with the play calling, with the clock management, I should say. You call timeout to set up a fourth and one, you make it, and then you call another timeout right after.
Horrible.
So you burn your last two timeouts, and they got the one pass down inside the 10. By the time you get everybody down there, you've wasted how much time?
And that was an interesting drive because Cook had the pick, but he also committed a blatant defensive pass interference that they did call. He was there clearly a second early. So it looked like it was all going one way. I thought it was early live. I didn't think I even needed to see the replay on it. Chiefs get the ball up that touchdown, 13-6, and do nothing with it to start the second half, right? And then, you know, Bengals come down and tie it up. You know, they make the drive. They convert two third downs. They hit the touchdown to Higgins, tie the game up. Now suddenly Higgins is becoming more the factor than Chase at this point, but you're still missing Boyd in the middle. And they're not throwing to Hurst, and they're not throwing to Irwin. But the Chiefs, to their credit, come back, and they answer. 11 plays, 77 yards. And, you know, the spot challenge was the big play. He was short. He did reach his hand out, Kev.
All right. That play.
Yep.
And I've heard this said before. If you're running the ball and you go past the line of scrimmage and then go backwards, what is it called? Where's your forward progress?
What do you mean?
If a receiver or a running back runs, runs past the first down, but is an attempt to juke or move, comes back and loses the first down yardage on his own free will, where is it spotted?
It's spotted where the receiver ends up, not where he starts.
So he takes the ball, puts it forward, then brings it back to his body so he doesn't fumble. Where should the ball be placed?
Well, here's the thing. You can't say that you've never seen a guy running out of bounds just stick his hand out and then tuck it back in. The rules in play, Kev.
What's the right call? I'm not saying the referee screwed that up. Somebody brought that up.
The right call is the one that they made.
Huh?
The right call is the one that they made. You get to the line of gain. It's where the ball is controlled by the player and then pushed back. He didn't push his arm back.
He brought his arm out.
He was trying to get there, and they tackled him.
But he brought his own arm back.
I'm not saying he didn't. But is he supposed to fumble?
He was being tackled. He was being tackled, put the arm out, and then pulled his own arm back.
Well, yeah.
Where's the ball supposed to go?
The ball's supposed to go where the ball reached the furthest point. That's the rule.
So if he starts running the ball and comes back, where is it placed?
He didn't do it. Kevin, you're playing like this little nip-tuck type thing. I think that – so you don't think that ball should have been moved forward?
I heard that argument. I think in the moment I thought, yeah, good play. I thought it was a first down, but I still question if –
you're going to talk to the rules committee.
There's too many nuances of these rules that just
– Of course.
Make it frustrating.
How many times a guy catches the ball, but he gets knocked out of bounds, and they call it incomplete because he didn't complete the full catch of a ball? I mean, it's the rules committee. Listen, I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, because it's not the goal line where you touch the goal line and the play is dead.
Right.
I agree with you. But it does happen on first downs constantly. It happens a lot with quarterbacks. It happens a lot with guys that are scrambling, and they let it happen all the time.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
Where they just stick the ball out while they're running out.
Yep.
I mean, it does become – I get your point.
Okay, yeah. In real time, I thought it was a first down.
You know, I thought he reached out. I thought there should have been a measurement. I didn't think it was a first down. I thought it was short of the yard, the gain, but I thought it was closer than they had given it.
Yeah, no doubt.
The fact that they gave him a straight first down, I thought was a little strange because I thought that was a measurement play. That's what I thought. But the rule is the rule. I get what you're saying, Kev.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that maybe the rule shouldn't be, but I don't think we can do much about that.
I think, and as far as I thought Kansas City had some guys step up. Marcus Valdez-Scantling really came up big with 6 catches, 116 yards, and a touchdown. And then on the defensive side, Chris Jones was just ridiculous. He only had 4 tackles and 2 sacks, but it felt like he was all over the place. And he was just dominating.
He was playing backup lineman, and he owned them.
Yeah, he was constantly in the backfield.
I mean, that's the thing. This is probably the best Chiefs defense we've seen during this Mahomes run. It really is that much better because of the speed at linebacker and the defensive line with Karlaftis helping out with Jones and all that stuff. This is a little bit of a better Chief team. But, you know, it's still kind of a, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what you're going to get from Mahomes in this spot. Another big play, by the way, was when Burrow got picked the second time. It was a great tackle by Higgins. Kept him inside the 15 because he could have ran out to the 30, 35 easily, I think, on that play. I thought it was a big play.
We texted there, and it was a third and long play. So because
It was like a good punt
because of Higgins' tackle. That was huge.
So what did you think about the grounding call, and what did you think about the push out of bounds?
Grounding call is the right call, I thought.
So did I.
Like you said, the receivers had already taken off down the field. There was nobody back there except Lyman. He threw it right into the ground at the lineman's feet. That's grounding.
Now, we converted the 3rd and 16 the next play. It didn't really matter.
Right.
We converted that play. So it didn't set him back too much. It just cost him some time.
It cost them the time, and it cost them the 10 yards, wherever the penalty was from.
Yep.
Yeah. To me, the punt return by Sky Moore was huge.
Was the key.
Now, when I was watching it real time, I thought for sure I'd see a flag for blocking the back. That was right near where the punt was. And I know you can call it blocking the back on almost every punt return.
That's the problem.
I thought he blocked him in the back as well.
So
you could call it the side, but I thought he got him a little bit in the back. It wasn't like a blatant clip, but yeah. I thought he got him kind of more to the back shoulder than he did to the even with them or behind. I thought that could have been called.
I think
Moore was an interesting thing because he had struggled, and then Nance mentioned it, but he was the starting punt returner to start the season. He muffed a few. They pulled him out of there. Yeah.
He was fumbling too much.
Yep.
And then you had the home scramble. First, and again, the old saying, you can call holding in every play. I forget who the left tackle was, but he had the Cincinnati defensive end in a collar. That was holding. That was not called.
But Holmes, we can call holding on every play.
And that's what I said. That's what I said to start the sentence. He could call it on every play. Mahomes scrambled. He was clearly a full two steps out of bounds. Osai, yes, it was a late hit out of bounds. It wasn't a cheap play. It wasn't a dirty play. It was heave the moment, spur of the moment type play. And you could tell I felt bad for Osai on the sidelines there. He knew that he didn't mean to. He didn't. It wasn't anything, like I said, nothing blatant, nothing dirty. It was a penalty, and he knew he cost his team the game.
I mean, his own teammate Pratt came off. How the hell do you touch the? I mean, you know, he was very vocal. A lot of other teammates stuck up for him, but Pratt was very upset about it. And listen, you know what? There was 8 seconds. It was the first time Mahomes was able to run all day. He found a way to get out there. It was I was a gutty play. But that 15 yards, and you saw Bucker made that kick by, 5-6 yards, maybe 8 on the best. Yeah. I mean, would he have more leg, and was he trying to be accurate? Maybe, but I don't think he would have hit it from back there. They would have had to run another play.
He was not hitting from 60.
Yeah, it would have been 59, 60 from right there. Oh, actually, 42. So it would have been 60, right there. Because they moved him down to the 27.
I think we all think it was the correct call.
I hate to see the game end that way.
And that's really the point, is that because of when it happened and when it occurred, and it winds up deciding 15 yards gets the ball gets moved up for the game winning field goal to take place. I think the result of it seems worse to us. I think we all think it's the correct call based on the rules, but it's just, you know, how can you tell the ref to leave the flag in his pocket on that call when that's the call? I mean,
you can't.
And you're right, Darren.
There were multiple flags out. It wasn't just one.
There was a call on Burrow about 2 or 3 minutes before that. And Kevin actually texted me because he thought it was roughing the passer. And when we saw the play, I originally said to you, Kev, I didn't think it was roughing the passer. I watched the replay. It was definitely roughing the passer. You were correct on that call, Kev. I just want you to know. And watching it in real time, I did not see it. I didn't think it was roughing the passer. Rewinding it and watching it again, I did think it should have been called. But it's the same thing with this play. You know, we all know that is roughing the pass. You have to make that call, but it just sucks that it winds up deciding the game. So,
I'm tired of the whole, I mean, you can talk about the yard stretching across. I'm so tired of sometimes they call it when the quarterback gets hit in the helmet and sometimes they don't. You know what? It shouldn't be called unless it's a blatant hit to the helmet. Enough of the crap. You see these glancing blows to superstar quarterbacks get, and then you see other guys just getting smacked and nothing happens. I mean, it's so inconsistent. I mean, we know pass interference and holding are already bad, but the smack to the helmet, that this touching of the quarterback's helmet is getting to be a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah. Eric Barton.
Yeah, Eric Barton hitting Phil Rivers. I mean, you know, it sucked. But anyway, so the Bucky kicks the field goal. Chiefs win 23-20. You know, a lot of injuries that the Chiefs are going to have to see what goes on going forward with all the guys that got banged up. Again, you don't expect to lose that many guys in one game. And they had a lot of guys go down, so we'll see who's able to play. The end of the game, you know, he's thrown to Sky Moore, who doesn't know the route tree, and Kemp, who's a gunner on the punter team. The only reason he's on the team is because Taub wants him. He's not because he's a receiver. So it's like if Hardy had to play cornerback the entire day for the Jets.
Yeah,
we wouldn't live with that very well. But anyway, so game was closed. The Chiefs have a tendency to play these good games in these playoff games. They do. They keep games exciting. Mahomes does things that are a little bit interesting. Even on the one leg, he made a couple of interesting plays. You know, he always keeps it fun. Referees definitely seem to be jaded toward the Chiefs, in my opinion. I thought the Chiefs got the benefit of, I don't know, maybe two and a half to one in calls. I thought Cincinnati got a couple, but I thought Kansas City got a lot more. I don't know. It didn't look kosher, so to speak.
Didn't look kosher, and just the overall lack of control of the game. Like you said, the third down, we got to redo it because
never seen that before.
Come on.
I've seen it where the guy punted, but the whistle's coming and they're stopping the play. They did this well after the play. Now the Chiefs got stopped on the next play. Don't get me wrong, but come on. What are we doing here?
Well, the next play was a pass interference. The third down they did convert on the pass interference. It was later in the drive that they punted.
They punted. Okay, yeah, no. I mean, they didn't score, is my point.
But they didn't do anything because of that. But it was just more incompetence.
Yeah, it just wasn't – well, this is what happens. We have a bunch of guys in their 50s and 60s trying to run with a bunch of kids. But they can control their game better than the kids can, but they can't physically keep up with the sport anymore. They just can't do it.
Yeah, they're our age, referee. We can't do that.
I mean, they're in better shape than we are, but nonetheless, they still can't do that.
So in a week and a half, we're going to have a Super Bowl. We'll have the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. We'll definitely preview that stuff next week. A couple of other NFL notes this week. Sean Payton gets traded to the Broncos. Broncos give up a 2023 first and second in 2024. Payton gets sent over there. They gave up a lot of picks to bring Russell Wilson and Sean Payton here. We're going to see what happens with that. Other news today, Tom Brady retired for a second time, hopefully probably the final time. Guys, any other info on NFL?
Yeah, it's the second annual retirement. Let's see if it lasts over under the 40 days this time.
I mean, listen, we can say what we want. I don't like Brady. I never liked him as a person or a player.
He
crap out of us and seemed to take great joy in it. I always felt that he was a little bit charmed. Not that he wasn't great. Not that he's not arguably the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time, based on all the stats that we're going to see. Most quarterbacks aren't going to play to 45. Actually, almost none will. So, I mean, the things he's been able to do in his career are amazing. Just never really, I mean, maybe because he beat my team 30 out of 37 times. I don't know. That could have something to do with it. But I never enjoyed watching him play. I never enjoyed anything about him. But I do respect the fact that he was really, really good. Great, actually. Really good is not even fair to say it about the guy. He will retire this time. I doubt he's coming back again. I think this one's over. I mean, he got hit. He didn't like getting hit this year. He looked so disinterested. He didn't look like he wanted to be part of it anymore. He thought he could come back and do the same thing over and over again and just keep being great. And without interior offensive linemen, he can't do that. And that pretty much is the end of an era for him. You know, good riddance, you know, great player. I hope I never see you again. As far as the other move for the Jets, Nathaniel Hackett. is now the Jet offensive coordinator. And you're saying to yourself, well, he did such a great job in Denver. How could the Jets not jump on him so quickly? But, you know, the thing is that this is all based on Aaron Rodgers, most likely. And if they're able to get Aaron Rodgers because they got Nathaniel Hackett, I, for one, am fine with it. I will take Aaron Rodgers for 2 or 3 years if I can get him and see what we can do, because I feel like my defense is ready to compete. The other thing about Hackett that you can say, even if they don't get Rodgers, he actually was the only guy to ever get anything out of Blake Bortles. He's done some things, okay, and Rodgers played well under him, and he's done some things in the league. He obviously wasn't a head coach. Obviously, Russell Wilson regressed under him, or was just never that good and we didn't know it, one or the other. I'm going to go with it regressed. But that's kind of a big move for the Jets, because you know Woody doesn't mind spending the money to try to get a big name at the QB position. So hopefully we have that opportunity. Kev?
Yeah, same feeling as you. If it's a package deal where you get Rodgers also, I love the move.
I mean, that's the thing. I don't know what to say about him as an old coordinator, except he had success. Hopefully it means something. D'Amico Ryans goes to the Texans. You know, third poor black guy. Coach in 3 years. The last two were for 1 year each. So hopefully D'Amico gets a chance.
Good luck, D'Amico.
You know, the maybe funny thing was former, 2 years ago,
maybe Cully did a pretty good there.
Job and they blew him out. I'm just saying, 2 years ago, Cully did a good job. They blew him out.
Yeah.
This year, Lovey didn't do a great job. They blew him out. And now we're down to D'Amico and whoever the rookie quarterback is that they draft. And, you know, I think that's pretty much it for me for the NFL. I don't know if you guys have anything else.
Well, the other coaching hire was Frank Reich in Carolina.
Oh, Carolina. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Boy, what?
Forgot about it. That's a good hire.
Good hire, but from the outside, Wilkes did everything he could to win that job.
Yeah, Wilkes should have kept the job. The owner of Carolina made this big statement about trying to revolutionize it and make it fair. So he fired a black coach that earned the job for another white guy.
Yeah, he good talked move. About his diverse front office yep. between some minorities and females. They've got the most diverse front office. Yeah, but on the field, what you see, he had a chance to keep the minority head coach who, like I said, I thought from the outside looking in, should have kept the job.
Carolina played better when he took over.
Yep.
Okay. Any information on baseball? Anything interesting occur? I know the only thing that I saw was we have an opening day to the season. It's Thursday, March 30th. It looks like a full slate of games for the first time in a while, which I like. Hopefully we'd have a full spring training for the first time in 2 years now. This should be a nice start to the season. The Mets made a nice little move. They signed O'Neill for 4 years.
McNeil.
4 years, $50 million. That's a nice little extension. Anything else in baseball, guys?
I think with McNeil, gets him through his two arbitration years, a higher salary, but maybe a little less than he would have gotten in free agency. But again, I know Gino's going to hate me saying this, but it's nice to see the homegrown guy get this contract.
Gino doesn't like homegrown. Glaber also signed. Glaber signed his arbitration. He came in just under $10 million. So right now he's a Yankee for $10 million a year as well. The other thing I thought was interesting, the Colorado Rockies owner came out against the Padres saying they're spending too much money. But that was kind of funny. We're both small town. What are you doing? What are you, an idiot? And there we are.
Steve Cohen can spend, but not the Rockies, huh? Not the Padres.
Well, the Rockies, apparently.
Well, the Rockies, yeah.
Couple other small signings. Zach Greinke signed with the Royals. Chad Green signed with the Blue Jays. And the Red Sox traded Barnes to the Marlins. We'll see if any of those really pan out to have any kind of influence in the standings.
I think the Barnes move isn't that bad. I think the Marlins pick up another arm in the bullpen. I don't think Barnes is bad as a setup guy.
Okay.
I can root for him now that he's not a Red Sox anymore.
All right. Let's move to NBA. Kev, yep. Anything interesting in the NBA these days?
LeBron. So the good things for him, put up the triple-double last night against the Knicks, gets him 89 points away from passing Kareem for most in NBA history. He's also now fourth in the NBA history in assists. Some number for somebody who's not a point guard.
Wow.
Those are the positives. The negative, grow up, man. What the hell was that temper tantrum at the end of the Celtics, at the Celtics regulation? My God, were you taking acting lessons out there in Hollywood?
He was fouled. I hate LeBron as much as you do.
But the reaction, come on.
He's a baby. He's used to getting his way in the NBA.
The number of calls he's, and even if he called the foul, no one in his history who have choked and missed both foul shots anyway.
Here's what I'll say about LeBron, and I don't like the temper tantrum. I agree, Kev. My thing is simple: is that I've enjoyed the NBA least under his rule as the great player. I think he's been too political. I think he's been too much about him being a superstar, and not about trying to make the league better. So it's fun watching him lose.
Yeah,
he was hacked pretty bad. I don't know how they missed that one. He got hit right on the arm. He got hacked.
but the overreaction. Was the part that just went, come on. You get every other freaking call.
And we just got finished yelling about the bad calls in the NFL. That was a horrible call. That was a horrible no call.
That's not just my favorite part. Apparently. My favorite part was Patrick Beverley getting teed up, bringing the camera out to the guy. Here's what you missed. that was a well-deserved tee.
But he got something out of it, so that's all that mattered.
He did. Yep.
Any other NBA notes, Kev?
I've got nothing else really offhand. Do you guys have anything? Oh, just one thing. No, going into tonight, I thought the Nets had sort of rebounded. As you know, KD got hurt. They lost their first four. They rebounded. They won four of their last six without Durant.
And then they got blown out tonight.
And tonight they lost by, 40 or thereabouts to Boston? 46. It was never – ever a game. I mean, that was just ugly. I thought they were going to survive, at least be 500 without Durant. And boy, that's an ugly one.
Okay, why don't you give us your top five, Kev?
Yep. Well, I did have Boston at number one on my list. So the fact that they won by 46 makes me feel a little bit better about keeping them at number one. Number two, they've won five in a row. I've got Milwaukee. Sliding up to number two. Denver, three. Philly, four. And honestly, you could take those three and you could put them in any order, and I'd be fine with that. And number five, I do have Memphis as my fifth team.
I actually have the same five. I have Boston, one. I have Philadelphia, two. I mean, they're 9-1 in their last 10, and Embiid is playing like an MVP right now. Denver, three. I have Milwaukee, four. And then I have Memphis coming in at five. I mean, they're all playing really good ball right now. You can't argue with any of those teams, other than Boston being a notch above those four. You can't really knock the way that's coming in right now.
Yeah. Like I said, when I said mine, Milwaukee, Denver, Philly, pick your order.
Yeah, exactly. Want to move to some NHL?
Sure. I guess the big news, at least locally, is a trade. And with a couple of Islander fans here, Bo Horvat coming to the Islanders from Vancouver for Anthony Beauvillier, Atu Rati, who is a 21-year-old rookie from Sweden, and the part I hate in the trade was a conditional first-round pick. Why are we giving the first-round picks for a rental? Unless they...
They have to re-sign him.
And I agree. I think last week when we were going through the hockey stuff with a little bit more in depth, I said that the Islanders needed a shakeup. They needed to do something, and this is the something. It only works, though, giving up the first-round pick if they re-sign Horvat.
The one thing I'll say as a Calgary fan is that I hope to God that I can get your backup goalie while I'm off, because I don't have anyone that can stop the puck. And I'd love to give you a couple of young skaters to go out there and do something with, and I think that it could actually work for both teams. Yeah. While I'm off's not playing, because Sorokin is just the number one.
Yeah.
If I give you Vladar and a couple of my restricted free agent young guys that can score, it might be something that makes sense. But the NHL right now is just the Islanders right now, they're not that far off. They have Washington's got them by a couple points, and And Buffalo's ahead by a point. I mean, they're not like out of it, but they're going to need to start putting the puck in the net. Yeah, G.
A couple of other things in the NHL. Last Friday night, I saw something that we never see happen. Carolina is playing San Jose, and Carolina is down, so they pull the goalie. There's a minute 52 left. San Jose had scored the empty net goal, so they were up by two. Minute 52 left, and Carolina comes back and scores two goals after the empty net goal to send it to overtime. They scored two goals, one at the 18:23 mark and one at the 19:48 mark with 12 seconds left. They send the game to overtime and then score in overtime for the win. I don't think I've ever seen that, where after giving up the empty net goal, you come back and score two to send it to overtime. And then in some other less happy news, we saw Bobby Hull pass away at the age of 84. 17 NHL seasons, 604 goals, 549 assists. He won the MVP, the Hart Trophy, twice. He won the Art Ross Trophy for most points three times. He played in 10 All-Star games. And him and his son Brett are the only father-son duo to win the Hart Trophies. Just sad passing with Bobby Hull passing away. You know, I know when we were really watching a lot of hockey in the 80s and 90s, Brett Hull was a superstar. To hear Bobby Hull pass away, it's, 84 years old. Any other NHL news before we get to top fives?
No.
I think the West is falling apart when we get to our top five.
Kev, why don't you start it off?
Yep. Well, number one, I think because of the way they played all year, they get a little benefit of the doubt here. You know, they lost three in a row. I've got Boston still hanging on to number one.
They won tonight, though. They beat Toronto.
Okay. Carolina. 1-6 in a row, including being in Boston. They're 8-1-1, so they're two. The Devils also 8-1-1. They're still playing great on the road, 19-3-2. I've got them at three. Number four, the scary team in the Eastern Conference, as they're getting real hot now, Tampa Bay. They've won three in a row. They're 8-2 in the last 10. And number five, even though apparently they lost tonight, I had Toronto there at number five. So like I said, very Eastern Conference heavy. I look at Dallas losing three in a row. I look at Winnipeg 5-5 in the last 10. Seattle is only eighth in the league in points. The Canes have a negative goal differential. Vegas 2-6-2 in the last 10. Nobody in the West is playing real well right now.
Two teams are. Colorado and Edmonton are both playing well. They're off the pace, but they are.
They're off the pace. That was my problem, not putting them up higher.
And I have the same top four as you, Kev, but my number five is Edmonton, 7-1-2 in their last 10, putting some pressure, starting to get it into gear with Connor McDavid. Darren, who do you got?
I got Boston. I got the Devils, too, over the Canes. I know the Canes are hot. I just like the way the Devils are playing right now. Yep. Then we go 3 and 4, the same as you guys. My five is Colorado. I like the way they're playing. I think that they're going to steamroll everybody in that West. And then I put Seattle 6, Toronto 7.
Okay.
And the Rangers still playing well. They're still 6-2-2 in their last 10, still hanging there at third place in the division.
Playing real well, actually.
Yeah.
Again, just like the Islanders, it's going to come down to the goalie.
Yeah. All right. And let's talk some – we'll move on to some NCAA basketball. Darren, a lot of stuff going on this weekend.
This is our time, guys. This is the stuff I love. Stuff you guys love, too. So, very interesting week overall in college hoop, just because we had the SEC – excuse me, SEC play the Big 12. And I'm going to let Kev touch on that because he's covering the SEC for us tonight. But we're going to cover a couple of leagues, let you know what it is that's going on, and just go over some big games. So when we look at the games from last week, right, I guess the best team I saw last week was Purdue. Purdue has become the dominant team, I think, in the country. The Big Ten is down. Let's not make any excuses. Indiana is probably the only other consistently ranked team, and they lost to Maryland last night, who happens to be very good, by the way. Kevin Willard's doing a nice job in Maryland in his first year down there. You know, USC pulled off the upset last week over UCLA. That was a nice win for USC. Gets them, and I think over the bubble, I have them in. I know that a lot of the experts would say that they're not there yet. Arizona went out there and swept the Washingtons to keep things going. Florida Atlantic continued to win. Upset last week, Hofstra went into Charleston and won. And we talked about Charleston a couple of weeks ago. Hofstra went in there and wiped the floor with them pretty good. I mean, they beat them by four, don't get me wrong, but they actually controlled that game throughout. Creighton, who's a team that was projected top 10, then they were 500. They had a huge win against Xavier. They crushed them last week. Houston held off Cincinnati in a game where Houston didn't look great. Clemson escaped against Florida State, but then followed up with a loss. And then Pittsburgh, I thought, was real exciting. They were down to Miami late. Miami turned the ball over three times in the last 35 seconds. Pittsburgh went on an 11-0 run to beat them. Kev?
And tonight, Pittsburgh just finished off the upset of North Carolina,
too. North Carolina, absolutely. So Pittsburgh is looking like a tournament team on the capel right now. And then the other escape was St. Mary's, went into BYU and won by a point. So, you know, a lot of excitement going on in college hoops. There's a lot of big games coming up this week. But, Kev, I'm going to switch it over to you. Let's talk a little bit about the SEC.
Yeah, the SEC, well, you mentioned it before, the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Real interesting to have these major conferences have a dedicated Saturday to match up.
This is the last one, by the way. This is the last one. 10th and final one. Next year it'll be SEC-ACC, just so you know.
Okay. Big 12 won this one 7-3. The marquee matchup at the time, number 4, Tennessee, beats number 10, Texas, 82-71. Tennessee, the defense, I think, was the difference in the game. Texas probably closed it a little bit late just to make it look a little more respectable, but I thought Tennessee had control of the game for the most part. That was definitely the marquee matchup. A couple of upsets, though, in the top 25. All on the road. You had Alabama, who was ranked number 2, go into Oklahoma and just put up an absolute dud, losing 29 at Oklahoma. Number 11, TCU, goes into Mississippi State and loses. Number 12, Iowa State, goes into Missouri and loses. And number 15, Auburn, goes into West Virginia and loses. So a lot of upsets there. A couple of the favorites that did win, Kansas State, number 5, beat Florida. Number 9, Kansas, won at Kentucky. You would think that would be the marquee matchup by name, but it wasn't. Number 17, Baylor, beat Arkansas at home. And the other two games, since I mentioned 8 of the 10 so far, Texas Tech beat LSU and Oklahoma State beat Ole Miss.
Couple of points just real quick. TCU lost their point guard, Mike Miles Jr., in that game. He's easily their best player. They're already playing without their starting center, and they still took them to overtime, Mississippi State. But Mississippi State found a way to hold them off. It was a good win for Mississippi State, who actually they're actually a bubble team, but I'll let you get more into that. Despite being 2-7 in conference, that's how bad. Yeah. It's just like West Virginia is a bubble team in the same way in the Big 12. So just kind of funny with that. And I Oklahoma following up this thrashing of Alabama by getting blown out right now at home by Oklahoma State by 15. Anyway, go ahead, Kev.
And I thought what was interesting was Iowa State following up their loss. They were playing Monday night against Texas Tech. They had a 23-point lead, I think it was, in the second half. Wound up losing the whole lead, and wound up losing in overtime at Texas Tech. Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Texas Tech might be the best last place team you'll ever see in your life. They are actually pretty good.
Their net ranking is still excellent, despite being in last place there. That whole conference, top to bottom, is good.
The net sucks, by the way. The net's as bad as the RPI and the BPI ever were. The net is awful.
So looking at the SEC as a whole, so the SEC has actually been real good this year. 14-team conference, when you look at the net rankings, I'm going to use some of those numbers. If you look at the quad 3, quad 4 losses, as a conference, they have a total of 5 quad 4 losses, one of them by South Carolina, 9 quad 3 losses, 4 of them by South Carolina, And the reason I'm saying it is because the Gamecocks are net ranking of 280. They are one of the worst.
Really bad.
They are really bad. So if you take them out of the equation, the rest of the conference is only about 8 or 9 bad losses as the entire conference. So they've been playing real well top to bottom. They've got two of the best teams in the country. And again, these are going into tonight's games. Tennessee, 18-3. They're number two in both polls, number two in the BPI, number two in the net. They did lose tonight to Florida. So there go some of my thoughts. But their other losses, they lost to Colorado in neutral site, at Arizona, who was number nine when they played them, and home for Kentucky. Key wins, they've beaten Kansas, they've beaten Texas and Maryland. They give up the fewest points per game in the nation, 54 points per game. So excellent there. The other top team in the country, Alabama, they're 19-3. They were number four in the AP, number five in the coaches poll, number three in both the BPI and the net. Again, the three losses, UConn on a neutral site, who was ranked 20th at the time, Gonzaga on a neutral site, and at Oklahoma, which is the unfathomable one. But they did bounce back, like you said, with that blowout of Vandy, 101-44. Their key wins.
43-15 at the half.
Whoa. Yeah. They've beaten, and again, rankings at the time they played them, number 12 Michigan State, number one North Carolina in a 4 overtime classic. At number one Houston, Mississippi State, who was 21, Arkansas, who was 15. So they've had some real quality wins as well. The two of them play only once this year, Alabama at Tennessee, February 15th, Wednesday night, 2 weeks from now. Between that game and you're looking at the SEC tournament, we'll see which one of those two gets the one seed. And the other one probably is relegated to the two line. Probably the high two, but probably the two line. Look at the rest of the conference. Really, once you get by them, the next 7 or 8 teams are all together. You've got Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas A&M, all 15-7. Auburn, Missouri, both 16-5, all with net rankings in the top 50. BPI likes Arkansas, Kentucky, Auburn a little bit more, top 25. Florida, who I had on the outside, they were 12-9. They got the big win tonight against Tennessee, so that moves them up a bit. So besides the top two, you're looking at 5, maybe 6 more teams out of the SEC are possible. They are the number two team in the number two ranked conference, so they deserve a lot of bids. We'll see where the number final number lies. Is it going to be 7, give or take one? Strong conference, top to bottom. Or except for the bottom. Any comments, Darren, about the SEC?
Well, the one thing I would say is Mississippi State's an interesting team. They can't shoot. They rebound like crazy. They defend like they're nuts. But the problem that they deal with is they don't shoot well. They're 2-7 in conference. 4 of those losses are to Alabama and Tennessee. So they're 2-3 against everybody else. Not that they beat anybody good. They beat South Carolina. And they beat Ole Miss. So they'd be 2 of the bottom teams of the conference. But nonetheless, it's going to be interesting because the schedule gets a lot easier as they go forward. So we're going to see if they emerge into a team that can battle, just like Florida. Florida beat Mississippi State head-to-head at the hump at Mississippi State. So Florida would have the edge in that. Arkansas has been a real disappointment after a great start. So that's the team you're looking to see come on. And A&M has been a team that's been really good after a horrible start. So SEC is a fun conference. It is good basketball every night. G, you going to talk a little ACC?
ACC. This is not your father's ACC right now. I can tell you that right now. Right now they're ranked as the 6th best conference in the country. They have some good teams. They have a lot of okay teams. And that's about it right now with this conference. Virginia's ranked number 6. They lead the way right now. Clemson's ranked 20. Miami's ranked 23. Those are your 3 best teams at the moment. And then you got a couple of teams that are probably going to get in. They're probably going to project to have 6 or 7 teams get in this. I think it'll be a battle for those bottom couple of spots. So you got this is where you got all the big guys, where you got North Carolina and North Carolina State. You got Duke, you got Pitt, you got Wake. All these Syracuse, all these teams are going to try to get in. The conference is good, but not great. It's not top heavy at all. You probably got one team that's good, and then everybody else is just okay. Unlike the SEC that Kev just talked about, where you got a lot of really, really good teams. I don't think this is – they got a lot of really good teams in this round. But I think they'll be okay. They'll probably get 6 or 7 bids. You know, at this point, Virginia, Miami, and Clemson probably have played themselves in already. And then the rest, they'll be fighting for 4 or 5 spots. North Carolina, North Carolina State, Pitt. Pitt with a nice win today. They're increasing their chances. They got some little mojo working right now. They're trying to work themselves off the bubble and in. We'll see what happens. And then you got Wake Forest and Syracuse right there on the edge. Everybody else in this conference probably not making the tournament, probably no chance at this point, unless someone really comes alive big or someone pulls something out of their hat and wins the ACC tournament. Clemson, despite the loss to BC last week, is still in the rankings at number 20. They're 18-5. We'll see how much more they can take. The one thing I will tell you about this is that between Virginia, Clemson, and Miami, their quad one games, they are 10-9. So you could tell right by that these teams are not, these are not really strong teams in this conference, but we're going to see what happens. Darren.
When we go, we look at the ACC real quick. I mean, you know, Duke's going to get in because they're Duke, unless they collapse. North Carolina's going to get in. The NC State is probably the team that gets the least pub that's really good, by the way. NC State is an excellent team. Pittsburgh, obviously, like we just talked about, they just beat Miami, and then they go into Carolina and win. The road game is the key to that.
Yep.
Clemson is the one team in that group that could fall off. And then that isn't great. You know, they got off to a fantastic start in conference. They're not as good as these other teams, though. I mean, overall, their record looks great. They're not as good as any of the other teams you mentioned in the league. Miami has the best backcourt in the league. I mean, Miami with Wong and Pack is the best backcourt in that conference, better than Virginia's. I think that Clemson's a team that could slip. Kev?
I think Clemson, last couple of years, they've been right in that bubble. And one of the things that's killed them has been their non-conference scheduling.
Yeah, the SOS.
And they have not learned their lesson at all. Their non-conference schedule rank this year is 300.
Yeah, they just don't play anybody outside the league.
So I think with the 18 wins so far, you'll find another couple, get to 21-22. That should be enough to get in comfortably. But boy, they could do themselves a world of good if they could just schedule better in the non-conference.
I'm going to give you guys a quick synopsis of the Big East. And Big East always looks strange when Villanova isn't good. They've been so dominant in this league for so long. Right now, they're giving Marquette all they can handle. It's a one-possession game with 2 minutes and 2.5 to go. But Villanova under 500. UConn got off real strong, and they're struggling now. So those were supposed to be two of the top teams in the league. But when you break it down, we have a three-way tie at the top right now with Creighton just a game and a half back in the fourth spot. So the three teams up top going into tonight, and that's separated tonight, is Marquette, Xavier, and Providence. Xavier beat Providence tonight by 2 in overtime at home. Xavier also lost Fremantle, their power forward, who averages 15-8 with a foot injury. So we're going to see if they get affected as they go on the road. You know, you look at the nets on these teams. Marquette's a net 11, Creighton 17, Xavier 28, Providence 35. UConn's the top one with 8, even though they're 17-6 and have lost 6 of their last 9. That's why I have problems with the net. You can't lose 6 of your top the last 9 and still be 8th. It doesn't seem like it adds up to me the way that they do this net.
That's probably the net. They don't take into account when you lose. It's just a loss.
But 6 out of 9, it's just not team playing well.
Yep.
You look at, just to break down these teams real quick, Xavier shoots the ball great. They shoot 50%. They average nearly 21 assists a game. They turn the ball over too much. That's the big thing. But they shoot 40% from 3, and they have 5 guys that average double figures. Led by Sule Baum, who's averaging 16.1 to transfer in. Marquette shoots 51% from the floor, another team that just shoots the lights out. they get 18 assists a game and 9 steals a game, so they cause a little pressure. They get out-rebounded, and they give up 11 offensive rebounds per game, but they also have 5 guys that average double figures, led by Cam Jones with a 16 a game. Providence, they've made more free throws than their opponents have attempted. I mean, they are a real physical team, and watching that game tonight against Xavier, they bullied them on the boards. You know, they are big, strong. The thing is, and we'll get into as we get to the tournament, because this team will get in, is that Ed Cooley has not done anything in the tournament at all, but he's rebuilt Providence back to a good power in the Big East, but they have not done anything on their way in there. They average 12 offensive rebounds a game and 5 blocks a game. But again, this is another team that turns the ball over too much. They have 5 guys that average from 9-3 and up, led by Bryce Hopkins, who averages 16-4. Now, if you haven't seen Hopkins, he's a guy with a sweet stroke. He's a transfer in, and he's built like a truck. It looks like Jerome Lane with touch. I don't know what else to say. Creighton, they average 78 points a game. They shoot 48%. They average 16.2 assists per game and nearly 5 blocks. They also get beat up on the boards, but they have 5 guys that average double figures, and then nobody else averages more than 5 points a game or even 5 points a game. So they get nothing from their bench, so the starters have to score for this team. Ryan Kalkbrenner is averaging 15.1 points a game. UConn's the other team. Again, 17-6. It's a team that plays they've been inconsistent offensively and inconsistent defensively, but they're big. You would think they'd be better on the boards than they are. They have a little bit of an advantage, but not like Providence does. Those are the 5 teams that I think will find their way into the tournament. You know, Seton Hall playing St. John's right now. They're up 6. Seton Hall trying to play their way in. I don't think they have enough. Villanova got Justin Moore back, which makes them a better team. They took Providence down to the wire the other night. They're taking Marquette down to the wire tonight. But 10-11 already, unless they run the table, they're not going anywhere either. So I'm just going to say that those 5 teams are the teams that are going to really have a shot of making the tournament and probably will all get in my opinion. Any thoughts from you guys? Okay.
Summed it up well.
Okay. Just the big games that are coming up this weekend. Florida Atlantic, and starting tomorrow anyway, Florida Atlantic goes to UAB. This is a chance for a quad one win for Florida Atlantic, believe it or not. That UAB is a decent squad. So this is a tough test for Florida Atlantic. Probably the biggest test they have left on the schedule. See if they run that table. Oregon goes to Zona. This is a revenge game. Oregon blew out Arizona at home. Now it goes back to Tucson. Boise State goes to San Diego State. Every game in the top of the Mountain West is a big game. This is another one. We got Utah State and New Mexico State starting up in about 5 minutes. Auburn at Tennessee. This is the Bruce Pearl game. Tennessee obviously looking past Florida today, and it showed as they're getting ready for Auburn coming in, so that's a thrill. Texas, Kansas State, first time they played. Both teams scored over 100 points. They're going to play a rematch in K-State. K-State won the opener. Kansas goes to Iowa State. This one came down to the wire last time these two teams played. Kansas won by 2, so this one goes to Hilton. Virginia Tech, just because of the rivalry. This is one of those games where Virginia could slip up. Just because Vatek, this is their Super Bowl. Miami, Clemson. Clemson has to win one of these games against the good teams, Kev. You pointed it out. This is one of those opportunities.
Yep.
Purdue, Indiana, another rivalry matchup, Battle of Indiana. This is a game I think Purdue is going to slip up. This is going to be a tight one. And then to me, Houston and Temple, the revenge game. Houston goes back to Temple, see if they can get them back. And the game of the weekend to me is Gonzaga at St. Mary's. And we're going to talk about St. Mary's in a second. This is St. Mary's is in first place in this conference right now. They play each other twice, though. St. Mary's is sitting there at 19-4. They're a really good team. The problem is that they have to play Gonzaga twice. So let's see if they can hold them off. But their net is really good. They're ranked. They weren't projected to be that great to start the season. The thing is, they're 19-4. They lost 3 in a row. In November, early December, they lost to Washington in overtime at the Wooden Legacy. They lost versus New Mexico by 4 and at Houston by 5. They also lost a home game to Colorado State by 2, which didn't make any sense. Their leading scorer is a freshman. So, you know, you don't expect Aiden Mahaney to come in and average 15 a game, but he did. And they play great defense. They allow 57 points a game. So really low scoring team. They shoot 47% from the floor. And they shoot 38% from 3, but ironically, they struggle from the line. They shoot 67%. They rebound great. They average 11 offensive rebounds a game and 13 assists a game. So this is a team that's well-balanced. They move the ball well. We've all seen St. Mary's over the years. this is probably one of the more balanced teams that they've had. It's not necessarily a superstar, but it's not the Patty Mills years, but they kick it around to everybody a little bit. This is a team that's going to be someone to watch. They're going to be a top 5 or 6 seed, I believe, in the tournament this year. But we're going to see if they're able to hold on to the conference. Gonzaga is not the same Gonzaga we've seen in the last few years. So this is St. Mary's chance to win the conference. And that's my take on college hoop.
All right.
One other college baseball note.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Packer.
Oh, yep. Billy Packer is passing away. That was a shame.
Yeah. Voice of the Final Four for a long time with Nance. And before that.
Yeah.
And with Raph. Started off back in the 60s at Wake.
He played, he played for Wake Forest from 58 to 62.
Yep.
He was an analyst from 1981 to 2008, and he called 34 Final Fours. It's a pretty incredible career.
He was good. He started off with Al McGuire and, and Billy Packer, listen, a legendary announcer, someone we grew up listening to, had a lot of enthusiasm for the game, and it was a shame to, it happens, unfortunately. His son Mark still works for the ACC Network. So the Packer family still in college basketball. I wanted to touch on a little bit of horse racing, if you guys don't mind.
Go ahead, Dick.
All right, we're starting to see the races for the Derby prep races now. Holy Bull runs this week. Last week we had Arabian Knight, who right now is a 10-1 shot for the Derby early. Son of Uncle Mo, he rolled at the Southwest, got out fast and won by 5.5. John Velasquez barely tapped him. One in the slop, one for fun, one nice and easy. Right now he's the favorite going in. Him and Forte. If you don't remember Forte won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Son of Violence. I don't remember Violence as a horse, so maybe there's something wrong with me on that one. But on that day he beat Cape Rock, who was a 2-5 shot. Just ran away for fun on that one. Cave Rock is 16-1 odds. Extra Arejo is 20-1, and Arabian Lion, because apparently Arabians are the big thing right now, 25-1. This week, the Holy Bull at Gulfstream. I kind of like Legacy Isle in this one. 3-for-3 lifetime, Son of Shackelford. There's a few other contenders in the race. You have Cyclone Mischief and Lord Miles. Lord Miles is a curling sire, so it's a pretty good race, but I think Legacy Isle until he loses is my way to go. We're going to have different races going all the way up here over the next few weeks as horses try to qualify for the Derby, but I love horse racing, so I'm going to talk about it. Kev?
Yeah, I've got nothing to add to horse racing.
Okay, good enough.
Yeah, like you said, once we get into it, I think the two of us really are the two horse racing fans here. I'm not sure if that Gino's really as into it. He's into the Derby and the Triple Crown races, but I think we'll be more into it leading up to the Derby.
And wait till we start talking about golf. It's going to really excite you all.
Oh.
Kev, any other sports stories you want to talk about from the last week?
Yeah, one quick one. The Australian Open finished up this weekend, and Novak Djokovic claims his 22nd career Grand Slam title, his 10th Australian Open. He now reties the Nadal for the most Grand Slam titles at 22. And apparently came out today, he did this with about an inch tear in his hamstring. Makes it even more impressive.
He was dominant, though, too. He won it. I mean, tennis now with these big stars, it always comes down to the tiebreaker, I feel like. He won 2 in tiebreakers, but he won in straight sets.
So that makes it 64 out of 77 Grand Slams that has been the big three.
Wow.
Just incredible. 20 years of dominance by those three. Incredible.
I mean, Federer is done, basically. So now it's now we're down to the other two.
Yeah.
I think the Joker will be around for a little bit.
He's a young one. He's only 35.
Exactly. Spry.
Okay. And Darren, you had one other point you wanted to bring up?
It's a college football note. The story of Marcus Stokes. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. Marcus Stokes is a 4-star recruit. He was going to Penn State, and then There was a kid that was highly recruited. I'm blanking on his name. That gave up his Florida scholarship, so he decided to go to Florida. There's a kid again. He played in Florida. Who was a 4-star recruit that was, I guess, was singing a rap song, a video of himself, and sang all the words to the rap song. And one of them was not a word that you should be singing. Racially insensitive. So the Florida Gators pulled the scholarship offer to him because of that. So then an HBCU, Albany State, followed up and offered him a scholarship, apparently unaware of the word that he used in the song. So they offered him the scholarship, and then they pulled it as well. Marcus Stokes is white, by the way, just so everybody knows.
When I was reading the story, it sounded like the coach knew about it. He was willing to give him a second chance. And then
the president was not willing.
But the president, administration of the school, said no.
Yeah, so now this kid is maybe Division II. I'm not here to play judge or jury on what words, we're allowed to say, what words we're not. If these kids can't smarten up and realize, stop recording yourself doing every stupid thing that you do. You're only going to get yourself in trouble. It's not cool. Nobody wants to see it. You shouldn't be speaking derogatory about anybody. But, man, this is a kid that's a 4-star recruit that had a chance to have a nice ride. And, he's not a huge kid. I don't know how great a runner he is. I didn't see him play in high school. I'd be lying to say I did. He's about 6'1.5". So unless he's an amazing runner, he's probably not going to be an NFL-type caliber player, most likely. But, his dreams are dashed because he was dumb enough to video himself and post it on social media of him singing a rap song that he's driving around with and is listening to in his car. Freaking wake up. Somebody's got to guide these kids a little bit better. It's just, I feel bad because his whole career is shot over one thing. No matter how much he apologizes, he will always be known as the kid that did this. Just my thought. I just thought it was an interesting, point on the night because it just doesn't make sense to me. Anyway.
Kevin? Kids, stay off social media.
Yeah, do your best to anyway.
Just say no to social media, except for the Sports Games from Queens podcast.
Oh, that's all you need. That's all we need.
That's all you need in life.
Gee, anything else? All right. So here we are. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking sports with you guys. We're going to do it every week. Hope you guys enjoy listening. We certainly enjoy talking about it. Please spread the word. Let everybody know about what we do. Like us on social media. Send us emails. Send us posts. Send us anything that you can think of to give us some critiques. Tell us what you want to hear about more, less, and everything else. If the horse racing really bothered you, come out and tell us. We're fine with that. But we do want to hear from you guys so we can make the show as good as we possibly can. You can catch download us anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, whether it be Spotify, TuneIn, anywhere you can think of, Alexa, whatever way you'd like. But, that's our show. So we are the Sports Kings from Queens. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.